So, so last time we start to discuss the problem which we want to consider, which is a reductive group contains discrete subgroup. We consider automorphic space gamma mod G, and we would like to describe many automorphic representations, where automorphic representation is, for me, is some representation, small representation, which is small meaning ASF, admissible smooth Fréchet representation. And important thing, it is morphism from V into the space of functions on X, which always can assume that this is a space of C-infinity functions. So this is some standard thing from function analysis. I haven't discussed it last time, that if you have morphism just in the space, for instance, of distributions, so into any G-morphism, C minus infinity of X, then it automatically, the image of our smooth space will lie in C infinity of X. So this is exercise. Okay, and again, the problem is to construct sufficiently many such representations. So, and for in this lecture and in several more lectures, I will discuss case, so the basic case when G is equal to SL to R contains gamma is equal to SL to G. So in this case, there is some relatively straightforward way to construct these representations. And I remember that this was somehow this was explained to me by Gilfand many years ago. He said that you should take some representation which you understand and try to map it into this representation. And for SL2 representation which we really understand, there is one representation, namely we consider space A, which is R2. R2 or R2 minus 0, let's take R2 and consider G naturally, SL2 naturally X of this space, and so consider representation space of functions on A. So this somehow the space of C infinity functions, S of A, rapidly decreasing Schwarz space of A, for example. And you have natural action. So you have natural action. I haven't thought about sign for it. S of A. Okay. So this is one representation which you understand. Now I will construct morphism from this representation into my atomorphic representation. I will construct operator E from S of A into functions on X. So in order to do this, I will recall that X, in fact, can be geometrically realized as a space of unimodular lattices in A. So the claim is that X is a can be thought of as a space of unimodular in R2. So why it is true? So first of all, what does it mean? Unimodular on R2 we have natural volume, and let's say 2 plesios this volume. Now if I consider space of all unimodal lattices, that's a group SL2R, SL2R naturally acts on this space and acts transitively. And if I consider stationary subgroup of standard lattice Z plus Z, then it will be exactly SL2Z. So hence X is a space of unimodular lattices. And so now I define my operator E just by formula that E phi at the point lambda, so lambda is lattice in X, is equal sum over all vectors V in lambda, phi of E. So it's very natural operation. So I have function on R2, and I would like to construct function on the space of lattices. So I take this lattice and I sum up my function over all points of this lattice. So this is a definition, and this defines me G equivalent morphism from functions on A. So let me write, I prefer to write functions on A to functions on X. So the only thing that this operator is not everywhere defined, because some might diverge. And this will be typical in our situation. We write some formal operators, which are some formal infinite sums, and sometimes they converge, sometimes they don't converge. Yes. Over all V. Let's take sum of all V. Okay, so now this what's good about this operator, if I take sum over all V, that it is invariant with respect to Fourier transform. So on this space X, so on functions, in the space of functions on A, we have Fourier transform. So why it is true? Because so it's Fourier transform is given just Fourier transform of phi at the point X is equal 1 over sum. But, no, I think that here it will be without 2 pi. So it will be just integral phi of y exponent 2 pi I omega x y dy. So we have two form omega, which defines volume on R2, and so we have standard Fourier transform, which in this case maps space of functions on X into itself, and the square of this Fourier transform is equal to 1. And Poisson summation formula tells us that E of Fourier transform of phi will be equal to E of phi. So this thing commutes with Fourier transform. Okay, so now so this is true if I work, for instance, on Schwarz space. So now I would like to consider this on some bigger spaces. So namely what I okay, so how to I put my name. So let's look how to decompose space of functions on A. So in fact, I will, for reasons which will be clear later, I will consider only even functions on A, because this operation, of course. But this is self-dual. I consider the set of self-dual lattices. My lattices are self-dual. No, that's correct. Okay, so f of a, so for every complex number, I will consider space Vs, which is space of homogeneous smooth even functions on R2 minus 0, and this will be my basic representation. So these are basic representations of principal series for SL2R, PSL2R in fact, but that's not. And I would like to define automorphic structure on this representation. So how I do it, the space naturally embedded lambda S Vs in space of functions on A, just homogeneous functions, and then I apply my operator AE to f of x. Okay, this procedure I claim is well defined when real part of A is part of S is sufficiently small. Real part of S is smaller than minus 1 or minus 2, I don't remember. Sufficiently small. So in this case, so if I have a homogeneous function, so I consider it as a function on A, and since I sum it up, and this sum is absolutely convergent. So this defines me family of morphisms, and now I claim that this family of morphisms holomorphically depends on epsilon, and so this thing are the only thing that I will call it not E but E tilde, because this is what's called usually normalized Eisenstein series. It's not, these are not Eisenstein series which we will consider. This is, I will explain the connection between them. So I denote this new S, or rather new S tilde, but it doesn't matter. I denoted E tilde S. This is my operator. Vs is standard embedding, and then I apply this operator E tilde, which is described somewhere upstairs. And then, so proposition things there. Proposition that ES holomorphically depends on S. So ES converges on when real part of S is less than maybe minus 2, no, minus 1. Yes, minus 1. First, second, it holomorphically depends on S. And the third, that it extends as neuromorphic functions. On X to all for S and C, and this function has I think maybe two, can have only two poles at 0 and 1. Okay, and so I'm not going to prove this proposition. So the idea is the following, that also satisfies functional equation that E minus S is equal ES times Fourier transform, which maps VS to V minus S, V minus S to VS. So Fourier transform naturally is defined on the space, for instance, of distributions. It maps homogeneous functions of degree minus S into homogeneous space of homogeneous functions of degree minus S minus 1 into homogeneous function of degree S minus 1. So it maps this space into this space. So if you take composition of Fourier transform and Eisenstein modified Eisenstein operator, you'll get here Eisenstein, modified Eisenstein operator. So Hilbert, everywhere. So far we didn't have Eisenstein operator. We will have it later. Okay. So I want to leave this proof as an exercise, and just the idea I want to explain. The idea is the same as in Tate's thesis, that for because of Poisson formula, so this thing is defined for when the real part of S is small. Now, because of Poisson formula, we see that it also makes sense when real part of S is large, because you can apply Fourier transform, and then this allows to prove that it extends in between. Yes, so that's the same as in Tate's thesis. In Tate's thesis also, somehow his definition converges only up to some line, and then you should do something. So I leave it as an exercise. It's not easy exercise, but since I will not use this, so I don't want to give a proof. But this is one of classical proofs of meromorphic insinuation of Eisenstein series. And here, these are modified Eisenstein series. And we see that they are nice, meaning that they have only finite number of poles. Now, the Eisenstein series, the problem with this Eisenstein series are that I don't know what nobody knows how to generalize it to higher groups. So what you can generalize to higher groups is Eisenstein series, the following operator. Consider operator from functions on A to functions on X, which is defined in the following way: E phi of lambda is equal sum over X in lambda, such that X is a primitive. Also up to plus minus 1. So we consider sum of primitive elements. And that's really, we write different formula for this, but that's really what appears in the theory of Eisenstein series. So it's clear that E tilde of S is equal E of S times D of S. Because any vector is primitive times some integer. In particular, it means that E of S is E tilde of S divided by D of S. And so you see that E of S has suddenly very many poles, which corresponds to zeros of zeta function. So that's okay, so this is the situation. So somehow I think that philosophically, so E of S is something which we can define for higher rank groups, and that's what I will do, can define, can analytically continue, and so on. It is a meromorphic function with very many poles, as we see. And somehow the idea is that you should multiply it by something, and so that to make it reasonable, to make it to have finite number of poles. So, and this, I think that that's my opinion, that all the theory of Langley cell function somehow can be interpreted as an attempt to find this factor which normalizes this unnormalized Eisenstein series and makes them normalized. Okay, so but this I just wanted to give as an exercise, which is not very easy, but it's not very difficult either. Okay, so and now, okay, so now let me describe this operator E in some more representation theoretic terms, so then it will work for arbitrary groups. Similar construction will work for arbitrary groups. So let's consider, so again, consider this case, G is equal to SL to R, contains gamma equal to SL to C. Now consider B is a Barrett subgroup, standard Barrett, so upper triangular matrices. SL2, B has Levy decomposition where M is diagonal subgroup and U is unipotent. So I will use standard notation. Gamma U is equal gamma intersection is U. Gamma B is gamma intersection is B. So it means that I consider upper triangular integral matrices and unipotent integral matrices. And in this case, gamma M is gamma B mod gamma U. So in our case, it is just plus minus one for this particular group. And this somehow, the fact that this group is so simple, a little bit. So in higher rank case, it will be more complicated. So, and usually people don't see this group in lower rank case, and so in SL2 case, so they somehow don't expect it faster. Okay, so I will consider this space A. It is space U mod G mod U. So this is R2 minus 0. So if you know that space that we can identify in this case G mod U with plane without a point, because the group G acts transitively on plane without a point, and stationary subgroup of one vector is equal to U. And so here we have invariant measure, which is a standard measure. Okay, so now on this space we have commuting action of M. So we have measure mu A invariant measure, and G preserves this measure mu, and hence it has the important thing is that I will consider the representation space of functions on A, and this representation is unitary representation, meaning that it is compatible with L2 structure, which is defined on some of these functions. Now, next thing is that the group M also acts on this space on A, and hence on space of functions f of A. Okay, space on X on the space A, namely it acts from the left here. Since M normalizes U, it acts on the left, and hence it acts on this space A. So in geometric picture, this M is just diagonal group, which is just isomorphic to multiplicative group of R, and it acts by commutators. And this group doesn't preserve measure. And so when we want to consider the representation of this group, then we should modify it so that it will preserve unitary structure. So we define, okay, so you have to, so probably I have to start this. Okay, so I will consider always action representation rho M in the space of functions f of A defined by rho M of phi at the point A is equal phi of M minus 1 A times rho u of m. So this is m x on a gives some so it changes some measure on a, and rho is square root of this thing. So this is standard normalization number theory that we should multiply by something. So this is done in order for this action to be formally unitary. Okay, and so now let me describe in this language Eisenstein operator. So first of all, I want to define more precisely, so what space on what space it will consider, it will live. So we have seen that in fact we should work with space of even functions on A. So I will introduce space XP, and this will be later generalized. It's just the following: this my space U mod G mod gamma P, or the same as it is G mod U mod mod gamma M. Here we have action of M. So on this space we have free action of M, and so a quotient by gamma M. So here I claim that it is the same, gamma M. Gamma B, yes. Later it will be P. And so what I want to do, I want to define Eisenstein operator from functions on XP to functions on X. X is the same as XG. And the idea is that in order to do this, I should introduce some intermediate space. So I have XB, I have space X, and here I will consider space ZB, which is just gamma B quotient G mod quotient. They consider here morphism P and Q. So, since this diagram will appear later in more general case, so it's important to understand properties of this diagram. So you have this space, and this will be some one of basic spaces which we consider. And this space is mapped here. So why it is mapped here? Because X is G mod gamma, and this is G mod some subgroup. So hence this is a projection with fiber of Q is gamma mod gamma P. I don't remember in what gamma mod gamma P. Now, what is fiber of P? P is U mod gamma P, gamma U. Just easy computation. So, in other words, fiber here, so this morphism is proper, its fibers are compact, and we can integrate, easily integrate over this fiber. And this morphism is has discrete fiber, it's covering with infinite fibers. And now we define Eisenstein operator from functions on X to functions on as a composition of operator Q star P star. So we consider functions on XP, map functions on X on ZB, and then two functions on X. So what does it mean? I start this function here, I lift it to this space, just lifting this P star, and then I push it down, which means that I sum up all fibers. So later I will write explicit formulas, which are standard formulas, there's nothing to them. So what is important is that I can immediately see that there is, in this description, I can immediately see that there is a formally adjoint operator to this, which is called constant term operator, which is pi p star of Q star, so it calls from functions on X to functions on CB to functions on XP. So namely, you take function here, F, you lift it. Here you can see that it's a function on G mod gamma B. So in particular, it is gamma U invariant, and then you integrate it with respect to to left action of U mod gamma U, you integrate it over compact thing. So this operator is defined somehow, it is defined also on all measurable functions, it is defined. There are no problems of convergence of this operator. And this so important thing for me is that this operator is formally adjoint to operator E, because just it's easy exercise, the operator Q star is formally adjoint to Q star and P star is formally adjoint to Q star. So it means that if so what does it mean? That E phi F is equal phi C F whenever everything converges. So it's this constant term operator will play central role, of course, in all discussion. Okay, so maybe now let's write just formulas. So this is it possible to write formula or leave it There's an exercise, just okay. Okay, I leave it as an exercise. Okay, so now we define a existing operator. So we define Eisenstein operator from space Vs of into f of x operator. Just you consider standard embedding of Vs into functions on x b, and then apply Eisenstein operator functions on x. And so, so proposition that E converges, absolutely converges, so well defined when real part of S is less than minus 1. So this is if you write formal, you'll see that it's exactly this unmodified Eisenstein series which I wrote before. So this is just different description of this operator. So, so if you have, yes, of course, it does affect. It does affect. That's why here I took xb, so which is quotient of a by plus minus 1. No, Vs is space of even functions of matrix, even. Oh, smooth even functions. I even wrote it. Even have it. Okay, next thing about next thing about the structure which will be important. So we constructed these two operators E and C, and then immediate question which comes to mind is, what can I tell about composition of these two operators? So, and what? Two blackboards. Are you sure? Okay, they are somehow hidden. Yes. Okay, thank you. Okay, but I will consider it here. Okay, so maybe I will write it separately. So important thing which will be later generalized is geometric lemma. Which describes the composition of these two operators. So I have operator E from functions on XP to functions on X, and we have adjoint operator from functions on x to functions on xp, and I would like to consider composition of these operators. Naturally, I would like to consider composition of C and E in this order, because this space, I understand, this space is more or less my R2. It's R2 minus 0, moduli plus minus 1, something which I understand. So the geometric lemma is that composition CE is equal identity operator plus some operator D, where this operator D anti-commutes with M. So which means that rho of M D is equal D rho of M minus 1. So in this sense. Okay, so now this will be one of the central six, so let me explain. So in order to explain, I should write down formula. So let's write, so formula E phi, so I consider all these are as functions on G. So E phi of G is equal sum over gamma in gamma P mod gamma, gamma V mod gamma, phi of gamma G. So that's my E phi of G, and CF of G is equal integral over U in U mod gamma U F of U G DU, where measure du is normalized so that volume of this group is equal to 1. Okay, so and now that's, yes, I realize this. Just let me try to understand so how to make it work. No. Okay, let's do it this way. So these formulas are important, so I will bring them here. And now let's erase this. Ah, so this is another one. Okay. This is easy to erase. Okay, so let's write what is C E of phi. So I have function phi, which is defined on XB, which is essentially even function on G mod U. So it's point G, it is equal integral E phi of U G DU is equal integral of sum of phi gamma U G D integral. Yes. So now what we are doing, we should decompose. So sum here is over gamma mod gamma B mod gamma. So now we should consider Brillouin decomposition of the group gamma. So we consider, so in this case Brillouin decomposition is very simple. So every element of gamma is lies in gamma B or doesn't lie in gamma B. So if I consider here case when it lies in gamma B, I will get just phi of G. Plus sum of gamma b, gamma minus gamma b of this, which will be my operator du. And now I claim that every term here is anti-commutes with action of M. So why it is true? Because I can so I claim that if gamma is any element which doesn't lie in Borel subgroup, then this expression anti-commutes with action of M. Yes, integral. I just forgot. So integral over. So why it is true? Just because so first remark is that when you so first remark is that on this set, so you have periodic composition on this set, so that, the gamma u here on, acts on this set on the left, it acts freely, so hence you can write this as just integral phi of gamma u g, but here integral is over the whole u, and gamma now lies in gamma b mod gamma mod gamma u. And not in gamma b. So minus gamma. No, not in Borel subgroup. Okay, so now what I so gamma is some element. Doesn't matter where it lies now. So I can write this as this kind of integral, and now I claim that, okay, maybe let me formulate it as a lemma. So what we have to show, just computation that if now gamma is any element, so just let's denote that h lies in g minus b, then I can define operator dh from functions on from functions on A to functions on A, essentially by formula that dh of phi at the point g is equal integral phi of u of h u g du. So we consider some of these operators. They claim that this operator dh anti-commutes with action of M. So we start with function which is u left u equivalent, and we get function which is left u equivalent with this property. And I claim that this operator anti-commutes with action of M. It's clear because if you apply M to G, then you can move it here, and yes, so you can, we can write, excuse me, so we can write that h is equal u1, h has Brillouin decomposition in SL2R, u1, w, d, u2. Now u1 we can move here, u2 we can move here, so you have element d and w. So when you take element m and move it here, when you move it to h, you will get element m minus 1. So if you get here. Now one should be careful that when you move it to u, you get some additional factor because you change measure. But these additional factors exactly cancel out so it will be action of m on u, and it will be cancelled out but by two rows which we introduced. So as a result we get that each term in this sum is anti-commutes with M. Okay, so now what I want to do, okay, want to do much more, but so what I want to do, I want to formulate so the strategy how I'm going to prove meromorphic continuation. So the idea is that I prefer to think, so Eisenstein series, so we define them.